Let's do it.
Thanks, Alex.
You have taste in a way that's meaningful to software people.
Hello, I'm Bill Gates.
I would recommend TypeScript.
Yeah, it writes a lot of code for me, and usually it's slightly wrong.
I'm reminded, incidentally, of Rust here.
Rust.
Rust. Congressman, iPhone is made by a different company, and so, you know...
You will not learn Rust while skydiving.
Well, I'm sorry, guys. I don't know what's going on.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today about large neural networks. It's really an honor to be here.
Rust.
Rust.
Data Topics.
Welcome to the Data.
Welcome to the Data Topics podcast.
Hello and welcome to Data Topics Unplugged, your casual corner of the web where we discuss what's new in data every week, from GenAI generated songs to data and privacy, everything goes. We're also live on YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitch, X, you name it, we're there. Feel free to leave your question, feel free to join us there as well. We'll try to address some questions we have here. Today is the 29th of March of 2024. My name is Murillo, I'm your host for today. I'm joined by my sidekick. Actually, I think it's a bit weird to call you sidekick, but the one that is always there.
And Robin to your Batman.
It's a bit strange to say that, but sure, I'll take it. Bart.
Hi.
And we also have a special guest today. We have Sophie. I don't know if I should try to attempt your last name. Sophie van den Aden?
Sure.
Okay, sure. That was very polite. Data analyst in the data strategy unit here at DataRoots, expert snowboarder, as we were covering before the official intro. Also born on the 13th, Friday the 13th. Whew.
Yeah.
But self-proclaimed good luck symbol, despite her birthday. But anyways, how are you doing, Sophie?
I'm very good. I had a lovely day. I'm excited for this podcast. I've been a huge fan of yours.
It's recorded. We all hear for your first. Next week on the intro, you're going to hear that. Cool. Really happy to have you here.
My pleasure.
Yes, on this nice day. So what do we have here? I saw you have some topics about data privacy.
Yeah, one of the things I really like is always looking at data and what we can do with data and how much possibilities there are. But then it always, I feel, not always, but in a lot of cases, it clashes with how far can we go for the personal side? Like, how can we navigate through regulations, through privacy concerns, through all of that? Like, I feel there are endless possibilities with data and with AI and with ML, and it's such a nice research domain. But then we're often held back by regulations and by things that are nothing to do with science or with other things, but more to protect us as humans. And lately I've saw something very interesting about DNA research. Mm-hmm. So in a lot of cold cases.
Is it this one, this thing?
Yeah. So actually, no, let me introduce Dr. Sophie Gladhout. She's a very interesting person because she's been doing research into DNA and chromosome Y investigations. And actually, she found a manner to investigate chromosome Y over generations until the first male person in the world. Really? So she can actually go down all the generations of the first male until you and Bart. Not me, because I don't have that chromosome. So it's only male. Male-based, and she actually found a way to, if on a crime scene, and the murderer or the person that is actually did the crime left some DNA, she can, through that Y chromosome in that DNA left on this crime scene, she can very easily find the murderer without having the actual DNA.
Ah, really? Without having the actual DNA of the murderer?
She has the DNA of the murderer, but she didn't get it from him, because we don't know who is he.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. So then I guess the through the Y chromosome, right? But then.
But she can't do it. Like, she, legislation keeps her from doing the actual things she could do with the Y chromosome because of privacy regulations.
I see.
Yeah.
Difficult one, huh?
Yeah. And we have a cold case of 30 years about the a woman that is violently murdered in the small village at the seaside. And now, a month ago, a new legislation has been approved that she can actually do this.
This is all in Belgium?
This is in Belgium.
Okay.
So it's Belgium legislation that is old and was old, and it kept her from doing her stuff and to actually solve. She's very confident that with this new law, she can actually get this murderer that did this murder 30 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting.
And
it actually, but it's not there yet. Like now they're starting.
Yeah, they're starting, but it's a gray zone. Like with everything, with legislation. But what she can do is she can actually ask for all the people that live in that village on the coast of Belgium to give their DNA on a voluntary basis. And when she will find a match with the Y chromosome of all these people, she can actually find that family, but it can be third, fifth, sixth nephew. It can be very, very far. And then, the police can do their investigation. But now they are on a dead end for the moment.
And I guess the only way, from what I understand, to be able to use that data is if you're officially a suspect.
Yeah.
That's the only way.
Yeah.
Like until then.
For now.
For now.
Yeah.
Do you think this is going to change in the near future?
Yeah, I mean, now she's allowed to use families' data. She doesn't need to put them as an official suspect.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
It's a new legislation.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's a bit tricky one, right? I think it's like the whole privacy, data privacy versus what you could do if there was not so strict privacy laws.
I think the tricky thing here is that some people will maybe work with her in this experiment, and then by accident, their sixth nephew is actually the murderer. And because they helped this investigation, they put away the murderer, but it's also their family.
Yeah.
And do they give consent about that? Like, it's not super clear how consent is given with actually putting people behind bars.
Yeah, it's a bit of a... Because there's also the argument of, if you have nothing to hide, then why do you need so much, right? And I think in the US, the privacy laws are less.
Way less. It's a big, big difference.
Yeah, there's actually this case here, right?
There's also... But I find, when we map this to data privacy... Or privacy in general, like where is the cutoff to this, right?
What do you mean by the cutoff?
Like, I don't know very much about this domain, but like, if we move this to messaging platforms, right? Like, if you do WhatsApp, you used to not be end-to-end encrypted. This now still some debate whether or not they can actually read it if law enforcement. So, requires it. Signal is fully end-to-end encrypted, no one can read it.
Yeah.
And I think you can make this argument like privacy is super important, no one should be able to read your personal messages. You can also make this argument where you say for legal reasons, for criminal investigations, for example, there should be an opening to read these messages. And I think like that is a bit like the threshold, like where do you want to still be able to do something that you feel like this should not be done for legal purposes, to investigate something versus blocking everything.
I think the other thing too is the proactive versus reactive, right? Like if you know that like there's communication about, I don't know, very dramatic, is like the terrorist attack kind of thing, right? Yeah. And it's like if you could just kind of monitor, then maybe you can proactively mitigate that.
But that's even one step further. That's monitoring.
Exactly. Exactly. Right.
Then what's the threshold then?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm not...
It's a slippery slope.
It is a very slippery slope. I'm not for that, just to be very clear for everyone that is listening, right? But I do, like, that's an argument that we do here. Thanks, Bart.
This is what, talking sideways in the mic.
Yeah, I was trying to be like cool, you know, when you hold the thing sideways like the rappers do, but it's a podcast anyways.
But so indeed, I'm not for that, but I think that's an argument that you hear, right? It's like you can be proactive, you have nothing to hide, why you're so afraid, et cetera, et cetera. And I think for also the other dimension to this, because we're talking about medical data, like DNA.
Yeah.
if someone, because I think arguably, like, right, if you monitor my messages and maybe you can blackmail me or something, like maybe there's something you can cancel me or whatever. There was also, I think this reminds me a bit. There was, I think, 23andMe, I think is the name of the thing, Bart.
23andMe. Yeah, yeah. A big data leak. Eh? Like, I want to say 3 months ago.
Let me see if I can find it.
23andMe, for the people that don't know it, is a service where you can send a DNA sample.
Yeah, commercial data. Yeah.
Yeah, and they do an analysis of your DNA.
Yeah.
And you get back a bit of an analysis of your, what is your ancestry.
Exactly.
And they can also link that to other people if you opt in for that. Link that to other people that also allowed to find relatives on 23andMe.
Yeah. And then what happened, this was in December of 2023, December 4th. That's my mom's birthday, by the way. Dona Lizachi, shout out. 23andMe confirms hackers stole ancestry data from 6.9 million users. And, well, it's not good, right? But then being a bit devil's advocate here is like, what's the worst thing they can do with it?
There was also ancestry data on there.
Yeah, I think that is maybe like, I don't know, if you have a son or something, you know, that can be a bit sensitive. But like,
maybe you're now on there. And then these hackers found out that you actually have a son somewhere.
Yeah.
That your current girlfriend doesn't know about.
Yeah, I think that's one, right? But for example, if you just have access just to your DNA, right? Your DNA data, like without the connections, what's the worst that they can do? I think, again, being a devil's advocate again, right?
Even there, like, we're not doing much with DNA yet, but from the moment it's starting to be used for insurance purposes, these type of things, it becomes super
valuable. That's true. That's also the conclusion I got a bit, right? Maybe you have a predisposition to Alzheimer's or something, and maybe that's something you can map on your DNA.
True.
And knowing, having the information is very powerful, right? Like, you can have a lot of leverage over someone.
True.
Like, maybe, like you said, insurance companies, maybe if you know you have a predisposition for this, they'll be less likely to insure you or to be able to pay so much, or I don't know.
Let's say 10 years from now, you want to become the prime minister of Belgium. Murillo for prime minister. And someone knows this, that you have predisposition for Alzheimer. That's very much blackmail material, eh?
Yeah.
Destroy your career. No one will vote for you.
You think? I think I could convince them, no?
Even though the Alzheimer?
I think I can be charming, no? I'll charm my way into people's hearts. Okay, maybe not. But yeah.
You are very charming.
But
you think so? You heard it here. Actually, this should be also in the intro.
But these commercial data banks, that's what they use in the USA to actually investigate murders. So what they do... So it's actually this whole case, it's also a big serial killer from in the 70s. And they found like a cigarette thing with DNA on it.
Cigarette butt.
Yeah.
This is the case, you say?
Yeah, the Golden State Killer. So he killed over 13 women, but in the 50 years ago almost. And now what they did, because of these commercial databanks like 23andMe, the police investigators were quite, let's say, creative. And they put his DNA in these databanks, and they actually got multiple matches.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they used...
His family members.
Yeah.
Okay.
And cousins and all that. And then... Okay, with a lot of effort in drawing the family trees, they actually found him, and he's now arrested.
He was still alive.
Yeah, and it's and it's all because of the creativeness of these policemen. Because in Belgium, you can't, like, the policeman just, he acted like it was his DNA, because you have to fill in all these details, and then he just put in the sample of the
cigarette butt
that he found next to the.
Ah, well, they just pretended to be a consumer.
Yeah, like a regular, and me would do to just find out who's our ancestor.
Okay, wow.
Like, very creative, but there it's all, it's not illegal, so they can do it. You know, there's not too much, but in Belgium, impossible. Also, we don't have really these.
But like, I'm drinking my drink now?
Yeah.
So what you're saying, like...
I'm going to take this bottle after the...
He has a Ziploc bag next to him, you know, he's just going to zip it up. So... What you're saying is, like, you could send this to 23andMe, like, as if it's yours.
Yeah.
And you'd just be like, 50% Japanese or something.
No, but I mean, I know that a lot of these police officers, they actually chased alleged murderers. They followed them in restaurants. And when you were done with eating, they went to their plate, took your napkin or something. And that's how they actually could prove that the DNA on that napkin was the same DNA in the crime scene, and then they could put it in these commercial databanks, and they had who that person was. That's very creative, but then who's controlling this and who?
Yeah, what is your opinion on this?
I mean, the family of these people that put their data and then they need to know I'm 50% Japanese or I'm 50% Brazilian, they didn't give consent for the investigation.
Yeah.
So their data is used for other reasons that they actually put it in the database. They just wanted to know where they're from or who's adopted them or something like that. Hmm. Or was not adopted them, but...
Yeah.
And now suddenly, like, their brother or their sister or their... is now arrested. So...
Yeah, it feels very fishy. Yeah?
I feel like if you give your data... you have to know for what purposes. I think that's one of the base things of privacy.
Yeah, you need to consent.
Consent. And now, because of creativity and with lack of legislation, they could just do what they want.
Yeah, yeah. I see your point. I think it's... I think
that is a discussion point. Like, I think the default is that you need to consent to everything it will be used for. But the question is, should that also be the case for legal investigations, for serious legal investigations? Or should they just be allowed to do it?
Yeah.
It's a gray zone.
It's a gray zone.
But I think I think most people would agree in ideal world, that's okay. Right? Like if there is a crime, there's something very serious that you need to. Yeah. And the question is
what is serious, right? That is the threshold.
Yeah. And also who's managing it, right? Like if you say there is someone looking at it, but you know for sure that they would stay in whatever, like, you know, it's not going to go anywhere else. The person's not going to tell anyone. The person will have no influence over that information that they just gained.
Hmm.
Kind of, right? Like if it's an automated system, for example, right? It's not a person, but you know for sure that it's not going to... So it's like the governing body plus what is actually a serious offense that this is actually justifiable. And I think that's where people probably are not going to agree always. Right. What's your stance on this, Bart?
On whether or not this should be allowed?
Yes. Or in which, how should it be allowed if in any way?
I think it should not be allowed, like Sve was explaining that it was done to it. In the US with like, let's pretend to be a customer and use someone else's DNA. That should not be allowed in a formal legal context. I think if they're it's a bit of a controversial stance maybe in our world where privacy is holy for good reasons. But I think if there are very strong arguments to make from a legal point of view and that there is a serious crime going on, and because of that you ignore the consent law, basically, and you open up someone's data, I think there should be an opening to do this, but with a very clear legislation and framework. And of course, that becomes super hard we're in a world where boundaries have become very virtual between countries. So what does it mean then in each country? And
yeah, it's a tricky one. But you do think there should be a way?
I think there should be a way.
Okay.
There should be a way.
And you think so too, Sophie?
I think also in Belgium now we are evolving towards that. But before, the only thing we could do is we have a database full of DNAs of previous murders or previous people who were arrested. And now the DNA on the crime scene could only be a perfect match. That was the only way to match DNAs.
Mm-hmm.
But that means that it would only be about people that already did a crime. So new people were never in those databases. So that is just very limited because we can see a lot in DNA. Like it's also very personal. No one has the same DNA as you have, except your identical twin maybe.
Yeah.
But it's something so powerful, and we, because of all these rigid legislations, I think we're losing a lot of all the research that has been done. And I think we can actually go towards a more open framework for it, because actually it's for the greater good. I mean, it's to put away people that actually did bad things and all that. For that, I stand that there could be a bit more flexibility.
Yeah, I know that maybe making this discussion a bit broader, right? Like doing machine learning, data science, and medical data is also not always easy because of all the privacy and all those things, right? So, yeah. I mean, I think I felt like that, like there's so much potential in the medical applications for data science, but the legislation and the privacy aspect of it make things super hard to really get productive in that space, I feel.
But would you give just, because some people just say like, let's all give all our DNA, everyone, just.
Yeah.
And then we have this whole database, and then every time we have a crime scene, then we have always a match or some. Would you? If they ask you right now, would you give your DNA?
I feel like the correct answer is yes, but
I wouldn't.
You wouldn't?
You wouldn't, right? But yeah.
But that's the thing, like, why wouldn't you? Because I think that's the natural next question, right? Why wouldn't you?
I don't think that they will be. It will be secure enough that it will not get leaked.
Okay, that's a good answer. I was like, are you planning to commit a crime, Bart? Like,
but also like, we all know how these things work. There's bias in the system. Much more machine learning models are being used for decisions. Let's say I commit a crime. Via my DNA, I'm linked to my kids. Will it impact my kids' decisions on, for example?
But you mean like people knowing that they are your kids?
People knowing they are my kids, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, right? Like, I mean, that will be some...
becomes part of the feature set.
Ah, I see what you're saying. Like, they, in the new...
try to apply for a government position.
I mean, that could be the case today, right? Like if my father is a convict or something.
Well, the thing is, but you, for example, we don't have a tracker.
Because I'm from a... exotic land of Brazil, where everything goes.
But that means also like data quality is important.
There's like,
if like let's say take this hypothetical example that you just told me, where I'm gonna take your bottle just to know what your ancestry is. I'm gonna log in, create an account on 23andMe, Bart Smeets. I'm gonna use your DNA just to get a view on you.
Yeah,
big data quality issue. Like,
yeah, that's true.
15 years from now,
that's true.
20 years from now, my kids. They will create an account on 23andMe, and they will be like super confused.
Brazilian? Japanese? Huh? Yeah, I can see that. Have you done the 23andMe actually?
No.
Would you do it after this leak?
I've always been a bit hesitant because of the US company.
Mm.
I would be, I'm interested in the information that would come out of it, but I would be, it would be an easier thought process if it would be European based.
But also because of the data privacy legislation, no? In the EU.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, but that's the reason. That's the reason.
She links back to what we were talking. What about you, Sophie?
I'm pretty sure where my ancestors are from.
Belgium?
Yeah, it's pretty boring. But I mean, also, I know that in these 23andMe databases, it's also very American. Like, there's not too much other ethnicities in it.
Yeah, but there's a lot of American people that come from.
True. Yeah. But that's why it's so popular there. Because they want to know that I'm 10% Irish, 20% Italian, because that's also how it is. But
yeah.
I'm not too interested in that for the moment.
You know, one thing on the ski trip, I was talking to Nick, because a lot of last names in Belgium actually are like Van Mechele or something, right? Like, which means like from Mechele or Van Heel or something. And Nick is from Heel.
And Mechele is a place name.
Mechele is a place, yeah. It's a city here. We have a colleague, Van Leuven, right? Which is the... So, and then I was like, yeah.
It's high level of creativity.
Yeah. But I mean, it's funny because... I mean, funny. Not making fun of anyone. But in Brazil as well, like if you go play football or something and... like they have two people with the same name, they usually give a nickname from the city where you're from. And I imagine it's like, for example, there's a football player called Alexandre Pato. And Pato is like means duck, but actually it's because he's from a city that's called Pato Branco. So it's like his, if you see his shirt, it's like Alexandre Pato. That became his name almost. And it's like, it's kind of the same, right? And I was telling Nick, and he's like, oh yeah, actually there's a lot of people in my city, Rio, that is a Van Rio. And I was like, they've been staying there for like generations. You know, and it's kind of like the same thing. I think it's in Brazil, it's not common, right? Of course, because we have a lot of people that came from other continents, including Japan, including Africa. But I feel like here in Belgium, I find it very interesting that you still see that, you know, the people that they've been here for generations, you know, generations and generations. So just a fun fact for people.
I don't know how we got to this fun fact.
Yeah, no, because you saying that she said that her family's from here, and I was like, yeah, I believe you.
Because, I think it was something that I noticed when I came to Belgium is that people go to the same supermarket that their parents and their parents before them and their parents before them.
Oh, really?
Like the same branch, not necessarily in the same place.
Like the like an Aldi.
Once you go Coret.
Coret.
For example, yeah.
Once you go Deles, you don't go,
go back. Coret. Yeah. Maybe just to another fun fact on the name thing. I heard this from a high school teacher in Brazil. High school, maybe before. So I haven't fact checked it, but he was saying that name, the word name, comes from like Latin or Greek or something, that from the word numen, which means destiny. Mm. That's because like there's also last names that are professions, like Schumacher, right? Like shoemaker and whatnots are in Germany as well. I see Alex nodding. Yes, Alex is my reference here. So yeah, which makes sense, right? Because back in the day, like you were, your profession was probably going to be like a family profession, right? So it was your destiny to become a baker, a shoemaker, whatever. So just a little, you know, dropping some maybe true, maybe not true knowledge here, but it's fine.
You had troubles pronouncing my last name, right? But no. Actually, it means, in English, it's very easy. It means from the end.
From the end?
From the end.
End. End of?
No, so I think, supposedly it is because my family always, or used to, live at the end of the street. That's simple.
Oh, okay. You even bought a heart attack.
Yeah. Again. No, but it can be very simple. But then, okay. So.
But it almost feels like nicknames, you know?
I just asked ChatGPT what Murillo means. You know?
I think maybe.
It's very deep. It's a Portuguese origin, often associated with Brazil.
Really? It says that?
Yeah. It is derived from the Latin word muros, which basically just means wall.
Yeah, yeah. Muros is wall. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, but actually I heard from someone that speaks like Murillo or something. Like
it's so wall to me is a bit like a bit of a letdown, right? I expected more.
Yeah.
But symbolically, the name Murillo can be interpreted to mean protection or strength.
Oh.
As walls are typically built to protect and enclose spaces.
Wow.
Can we get applause there? It's okay. It's fine. Just a guy. Just call me Murillo. It's fine. But yeah, I think I actually heard that Murillo. I don't know. Actually, I heard someone like in French, does it, Murillo? Does it mean anything, Alex? Yeah, no? Murillo. Yeah, actually, I heard that it means like small wall, which to me felt a bit useless, but okay. So actually, I knew that, but I just didn't want to put it there for everyone to know.
What else do we have on the agenda?
More on the data privacy part. Computer vision data to make our roads safer.
Mm.
Sophie, do you happen to know anything about that? Maybe?
Yeah. I know there's been a really nice project with smart cameras and computer vision to detect if people use phones or their mobile devices behind the steering wheel while driving. We all know, I think, yeah, every one of us has done it and we know that it's not okay.
No, I never done it.
I never done it. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, then. And they there was a really nice project that worked really good, a really good image recognition model. But again, Belgium policy or Belgium legislation didn't allow it because it was very clear who was in the car, what was he doing, what was he eating, with who was he or she. Okay, he could detect if I was using the mobile, which was good, but he could also see everything else. And then they were like,
they didn't let it fly.
Yeah. And who's owner of the data? How do we store it? Do we blur the faces? Do we, all these kind of questions popped up. The organization was like, yes, of course we follow all the privacy rules and still, or it's a political thing because in Germany, in the Netherlands, they use it and it works very good. It's very good as a reinforcement and the fines are high. Yeah. In the Netherlands and in Germany.
Yeah, Alex, you're going to Germany later, right? Just watch out.
Be careful.
Just know, just saying.
And it's actually very good as a campaign.
Would this image be flagged?
No, no.
We're looking at an image of a guy holding his phone.
The images are not from within the car, of course. If you go down.
So.
But this would be flagged if it was from the cameras. I think, this is a good example. This person so is also.
This is someone that is not holding his phone to his ear, but like in front of his chest.
It's like the phone is on the speaker. Yeah.
But someone else is driving the car. So,
this image here, this video.
Yeah, I mean, would be the image of the smart camera that makes it. Hmm. But you can see everything, right?
Yeah.
Everything, who is with you, who is not with you.
It feels a bit weird, huh?
But this is also, this is okay. This is really cool. I'm just kidding. So now we're just showing an image. So this is part of a YouTube video. So the links, all of everything will be in the description if you're curious. And actually, this is a picture. So you see a bit from a helicopter view almost. So it's from above. And you see, actually, this person really went all out. The person is on the phone with both hands. And then the person next to them is holding the steering wheel for them. So I think this is extra detection. The person is pretty extra, I would say. But yeah, so I guess the issue here is that you can see the make of the vehicle. You can actually connect probably this information with more stuff. You see the people that they're with, right? Yeah. So I guess it's a bit more.
To me, this feels weird.
Feels weird. Why?
I can't really define it. Because like when you do, when you go over a certain speed limit, you get also your picture of your car is being taken.
That's true.
So, you know, the make, you know, the license plate. Actually, but this feels more personal.
This feels very personal.
This.
But what if the person was speeding right now? They would still take the picture and all the image would be similar, no?
When you're speeding, I actually got I know someone that got a ticket the other day, and there was actually a picture of this person.
Yeah,
it's new.
Here, but here in Belgium.
Oh, but what kind of picture? In the car,
like this person behind the
driver.
Like
this person behind.
It wasn't a good picture.
Yeah,
like, it wasn't from the right side of this set person. But even that felt a bit weird. But maybe that's the same than this, right? Like that's the same level of.
But did it also show like the whole dash cam, the whole windshield, who was next to you? Because
zoomed in on.
I feel that is a lot of the issue here. That it's everything. Like imagine you're with the person that is not the person you're normally with, and this data get leaked and all that. Like it's too much information.
Well, also So a friend of mine also went to got a fine in Germany. So apparently, according to this friend, the speed limit changed very short distance, and there was a camera right after. Mm. And actually, they took a picture and they sent the fine with the picture. And it was
exactly the same for me.
Yeah,
I think it even wasn't
for you. Ah, that's whoa! You just
I'm not a friend. But I think
very smart, smooth.
See?
Smooth.
That's what we do here. Ah. Master police, get him. And actually, there was a picture of the person.
That was exactly like that.
And the person was very serious, was very mean, very, very scary. And then there was someone next to them in the car, but then there was a big block, big crossed out. But that's the thing. Like,
you still have the data, right?
You have the data, yeah. But the thing is also, like, that can be very sensitive if they didn't block it out or if there's an issue, like, and you send the fine to your house and then someone opens it, right? It's like...
Yeah, but no, right? I agree.
It's very, you know, like, it's... You know, I think
you have something to hide.
No, not my friend never had anything to hide. He was a straight up fella, I would say.
But are there other use cases where this would be a problem?
I don't know, but that's the thing, right? So the issue there was like that you have the make of the car, you have what the person is doing, who they're with, maybe, I don't know, other things, right? I feel like this is less of a, I'm not sure if I feel like this is less of an issue.
Yeah, but I feel a bit, because now it's cars. Tomorrow it's like crossing the pedestrian light without.
But it is very deadly. Eh? I read that it's like 50 deadly accidents just because of using your phone behind. Okay. So it always brings it a bit in balance. I'm like, yeah, sure. Then
it's
maybe
bit,
we
that's
can
slippery slope again.
Like, yeah,
where's the threshold?
Imagine it's your you can also always think like that. Imagine it's your brother or your that gets killed because someone is using their phone.
Yeah, that's true.
Easy, and you can take all the data then.
Yeah, so I think here on this thing, it says 2021 alone, there were 1,000 accidents caused by distraction, among other things, due to cell phone. Yeah, this is in Germany. And then if you go here for the Belgium article, it says, according to the recent estimates, mobile phone usage behind the wheel causes 50 road deaths and more than 4,500 injuries in Belgium every year.
I feel that's a lot. And if it, it's a lot.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think... Yeah. But I think it's like, it can be a slippery slope, right? Like they're using the cameras and then they're like, oh yeah, but maybe they're not talking on the phone, but maybe they are doing something else, you know? Or maybe they're not wearing the seatbelt, for example. right? Exactly. And then, you know, you're wearing a seatbelt. Maybe you can do the camera here. Maybe you can do there. You know, like once you have the data available, I feel like it's quote unquote easy to have a slippery slope there. I don't know. I'm all for reducing road accidents, of course, but I can understand the...
There was one example that the person was petting his dog on his lap.
Driving,
while driving. And then he also got a fine for it. And he was like, yeah, but...
Yeah.
Was this spoken about? I mean, was this communicated? That was... Yeah. So...
Is there a law that you cannot pet your dogs?
I don't know. It looks like it. Otherwise, how can you get a fine?
Yeah, I don't know. Mm. I never heard of that.
Or it's something like you have to have your both hands free or on the steer or something.
Yeah, yeah. I heard... Actually, yeah, I think that's a thing.
Yeah.
Which... I mean, I always do, but my friend, that one that got the fine, sometimes he doesn't. But, yeah.
These cameras, they do like in 1 hour, they can have more, they see more people using their phone than a police officer a whole year. So 1 hour, because a police officer has to really see it happening while he's driving next to you, stuff like that. So it's very, I mean...
Yeah, but that's so in Belgium, that's how it works, right? Like you have the speed cameras, so it's automated, or you can have a police officer that can give the fines if there are other infractions, I guess.
He has to see you using your phone.
Yeah.
Like,
or
really
not wearing the seatbelt,
exactly.
Or like making a turn without a turning light or something.
So it doesn't happen that often, you know? And with these cameras, it's so efficient.
Yeah, in the US, as well, I lived in the US for 4 years, and the way that they actually do the traffic control is also with police officers. But they actually do it quite a lot. Like they actually have, that's the main way.
Okay.
So they actually have a lot of police officers. And I think I may be wrong here, but I think they even have some quote unquote quotas, like to give warnings or stuff. So like they expect police officers to be on the road and keep the road safe, which I thought it was a bit inefficient before I moved there. But now I actually think it's pretty good because in Brazil, it's mainly speed cameras as well. And with Waze and all these other apps,
you know exactly where
they are. So in Brazil, like people speed and they slow down for the camera and then they speed again. And all the other infractions are just unaccounted for. Actually, in Brazil, it's a bit different because it's not a police officer that gives the fines. There's a special police officer, like he's a traffic control guy. Mm-hmm. And they're the only ones that give fines. Okay. Regular police officers don't. But then it's like, I think it still gets very messy. But but then for this one, verdict on the cameras for phone usage behind the wheel.
I would say go.
You're pro.
Yeah, because also you're on a public road. I mean, you're not in your house, you're not on your private domain. And you're actually putting other people in danger. That's for me like a hard...
But then like talking about the whole the data privacy part of the discussion is that you need to give consent. You're not giving consent at all here, right?
But law enforcement.
If the police officer is standing next to the road, she's exactly the same thing.
Do you give consent then?
But like the police officer is not a system, right? Like,
what's the difference?
Yeah, it's not stored anywhere. It's just.
So if there's like on every corner a police officer standing, that's fine for you.
Well, the Brazilian me wants to say no, but yes. No, I think it's more like. I think the whole issue is that there's data is recorded and can be shared with people, right? With a police officer watching,
potentially
leaked, exactly, right? If it's a police officer, he's not going to share his memories with someone, right?
Potentially used for different things.
Exactly, right? What about you, Bart? Are you pro or?
Well, after this person that I know received this picture,
it's too late. Huh?
I think we passed it. We're past it. Bart.
If I just need to say like a blanket yes-no statement, I'd say yes, I'm fine with it.
Of course. I feel like you were a bit, strong-armed into that,
And you? Would you?
Oh, that's not how this podcast works.
Oh, it doesn't. Oh, okay.
But to me, it's very much a slippery slope, right? Mm. Like, I think I'm fine with, like, next to a speed camera, that there is a camera that... also looks at maybe it's the same camera that looks at whether or not you're holding your phone from the moment it's at the pedestrian light. I'm like, like maybe that's one step too far. Like then it becomes really like real-time surveillance of people, right?
Yeah, like the Big Brother kind of thing.
I don't know. I don't know where the starter and stop should be, to be honest.
What about seatbelts? I think that's a controversial one because arguably...
I think that's only controversial for people from Brazil.
Yeah.
No, but I feel like the argument is if I don't wear a seatbelt, I'm putting myself in danger.
seatbelts today you cannot not wear. Like your car starts beeping, you go crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
You wear
your
earplugs if you
don't get me wrong. I always wear a seatbelt.
Yeah.
My friend, no, just kidding. Like I'm full for it, right? But if someone comes to me and say, look, it's like, if something happens, it's my, like, I'm not hurting anyone. Like, it's not like, you know, like if you're on the phone, you may cause an accident, you may hurt someone else, right?
Okay.
If you're on the seatbelt, whether there's an accident or not, you're just risking yourself.
Protecting yourself.
Exactly. So it's more of a self thing, and I should have control of my over my body or whatever, you know, like what risks I'm taking, right? You want to go ski off slope? That's your risk, right? You're making the decision. And I think that argument, I think, has some merit to it.
True.
I mean, unless with the assuming that you cannot fly through the windshield and hurt someone because you flew through the windshield, like given that.
But then you're saying that you would not appreciate it that they do it for the seatbelt, but yes, for the phone.
Well, I think you should, I think it's, it should be enforced. I still think it's, I'm still for it. Right. But if someone comes to me and gives me that argument, it wouldn't be very easy for me to just kind of discredit that and say, or to rebuke that. You know, actually in Brazil, even I think my history teacher told me as well, in Brazil, it's illegal to commit suicide. So if you try and you fail, you can be arrested. Jesus. That's what I heard.
It was
a bit of a hard time, like harm for yourself. If that is the main risk to put that in this situation.
But
collecting the, maybe the, like, I have a speed bike, electric speed bike. Mm-hmm. Speed pedal, like I think it's called. You are enforced to wear a certain type of helmet. Otherwise, you can get a fine. There are special helmets for speed pedelecs.
Mm-hmm.
This would be a case where you say, we're not allowed to monitor this with a camera next to a stoplight.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, again...
Because it's only you that has a risk.
Something like that.
I agree. But like, to me, it's very hard to define that...
But I still think it should be a regulation. I still think you should enforce this. I still think so.
But you should enforce it.
Like, I mean, maybe not with cameras, right? But like the same way that, like, using this, you get a fine if you don't wear the helmet. You wear a fine if you don't wear seatbelts. I think I don't. If I was making the decisions, I would make the same decisions as well. And I think maybe you can argue that maybe the people that don't wear seatbelts, they don't understand the increasing risk, right? Like they don't have. So it's like you just make a legislation because, you know, or the same thing with the helmets. Maybe you can say, yeah, but then you're treating people like kids, you know, and they should just, you know, like, it's a, you can go on and on. But like, I feel like if I was making the decisions, I would still make, pass a law or whatever, like that if you don't do this, then there's a fine, there's this, there's that. So, not sure. We also have a question here.
Assuming the pictures taken are mailed to the address the car is registered to, along with the fine. I think that is what we would assume. I think the problem with this is that it will probably be mailed to the address the car is registered to. questions that might not be the driver. And thing is, it's of course it gets mailed to, but it's also like it gets stored somewhere, right? And that storage can, like, who knows what happens to it. Then.
Yeah, that's for my friend. That got the German fine. It was like, it was virtual, right? But yeah, basically they just sent the fine. That was the picture in the fine. So,
and we don't know what is illegal in the future. There was, I don't know how long ago, this 2 years ago, when was, this is really out of my domain of knowledge, but I want to say in Texas,
mm-hmm.
abortion got... and it's actually like there is, I'm not sure how it was implemented in the end, but at the point they were talking about, like, if you have a tip on someone actually going for abortion, you can get a sort of a bounty, you can get paid for these tips.
Oh wow.
Which immediately for the major tech players, like, created for all tech players, like, certainly, like, your database administrator becomes a potential leak because someone is paying for this data.
Yeah.
And I think never when they were creating this database of this person on Google Maps was close to this abortion clinic. Like, Google Maps probably never thought, like, this will at some point be a problem.
True.
But suddenly, like, there is a new state that you're in, and this is suddenly super high-risk data for people involved.
Yeah.
And I think that is also something that is very hard to... understand, like, even if you say now for this specific situation, this is okay, the data is there. And what does that mean, like, a few years from now? Like, if...
Yeah, I think I... Is this the way... I'm going to see if I can... Reject. All right. Whistleblower website for snitching abortion shutdown. Yeah, it's a bit... Yeah, is that what you were started with, right? Like, you don't know what the future holds, right? So it's like...
Well, for now, I'm very happy that I live in Europe.
Yeah. Me too. Me too. But yeah, it's indeed, it's like... The rules there's of the game change, yeah, in the middle. There's
a follow-up question on the emailing photos through your address, and I think it's a very fair one. Like, how would it comply with GDPR? If you're on a public roadway in public, no guarantee of your privacy. But when you mail your photo to potentially someone else's address, the owner of the car, like, does it comply with GDPR? Good question.
Yeah, actually, that's, yeah.
To be fair, I don't know. To be fair, I would very much doubt it, actually. We just, but... this person never consented to it, eh?
Yeah, but, indeed. It's a...
But I think police or law enforcement, I'm not sure if they need that kind of consent.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I can't really judge it, to be honest.
It's a very good question.
We need a GDPR expert on there.
Okay. In the interest of time, there's one more here on the on data and privacy debate.
Yeah, just maybe because it's 10 minutes to 5, just to remember, if I become silent at 5, it means that I snuck out. Because
he had a heart attack.
No, because I had a heart
attack. The heart issues had the best of Bart. And we just carried on with the podcast. Maybe just one last one. I don't think we have a link for this, but it's more about cybercrime. So like fraudulent transactions, right? So... and by the way, you have a fan, Bart.
Yay.
I'm with Bart on this one.
Whoop, whoop.
Go, Bart. All right. You want to pause or no?
No, that's just fine. Kidding. My whoop whoop was fine. That's good.
That's one about like cyber crime, right? So fraudulent transactions, phishing. I think, Sophie, I think what you had brought up is, again, if there was a way, a safe way, a safe framework to monitor like the transactions and all these things, we could be preventive as well on phishing and all these things, right? I think it's a bit of what we mentioned before, right? It's like, yeah, you can be preventive, but I think opening up to that level, I think.
Would you be open to give your bank the authorities to analyze all your transactions and report to police if they see something? They already do, by the way, for severe cases, yeah. But it's more like how comfortable are you yourself for the greater good, for the greater or for the safety of the community or for the safety of society? Like, it's just that balancing act that is just so interesting, but also I don't know how it goes.
Yeah, I think for me is, again, I think Bart also touched on this. It's like, do you trust that there is a system that is secure enough that you can disclose all these things and everything will be fine?
Mm.
Right? I think that's the... And again, it's not the idea. It's more the putting the idea into practice that makes me a bit iffy.
I think we just need a lot of control on the control of your data.
Yeah.
That's just a whole...
Yeah,
and it's very expensive.
Yeah, and I think trends like financial data, I think it's very easy to find malicious intent, right? So that's why I think it's also extra, like, this is the one that I think I'm the most against, quote unquote. Not sure. How do you feel about this, Sophie?
I'm always just, if it could prevent that, for example, my grandmother is not phished anymore. Because, you know, all these elderly people are so easily phished and it's so hard to track because they're getting phished into actually doing transactions voluntarily to these malicious persons. But if I could prevent that by giving those banks the authority to analyze, I would always go for yes, let's go.
Yeah.
But you also have on the other side, people with bad intentions about yourself. Of your own data, and that's just the balancing act.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. I think also, indeed, like maybe the circumstance would change, right? If I had a personal experience with this, but yeah, I see your point. What about you, Bart? You want me to repeat the question?
Yeah, maybe.
If you could, would you disclose your financial transactions, to stop phishing attacks and like all these cybercrime, especially like for older people? I feel like they're more susceptible for these things. Is this something that you'd be okay with?
I'm not sure how it would stop cybercrime if I open up my transactions. What do you think kind of transactions that I do? All these fish people's money comes to me, or
no? I mean, I don't know. I'm wondering if I make a transaction to you, it'll show up on my end and your end, right? But they will know that you're not a legitimate business or something, right?
No, I would not.
Okay.
But this does get done on a more macro scale, eh? Like between banks, between clearing houses. Does get done. Eh? Like there are blacklists and whitelists, and monitoring on these things,
yeah.
And we are actually involved in these things, actually doing this. So yeah, I'm very much for it. That's like at an institutional level.
Okay.
But at the individual level, I'm a bit hesitant. I mean, that's a bit like, to me, the trend here and all these things. Like, mm-hmm. The moment it comes
too personal,
the privacy bubble of a person, like, mm-hmm. where does this is a good use case versus mass surveillance, like that.
yeah. All right, we have maybe Bart, you have a hot take. We have 5 minutes. I'm trying to be mindful of your time as well here.
We already do the hot take.
Well, I think we're wrapping up, no?
Yeah. Okay. It's a hot take. It's a snippet I heard from a podcast of a very controversial person.
By the way, we need a special beat or sound for the hot take, you know? We need that. Just
I see what you mean.
Bit of a side note, you know?
Yeah. I see what you mean.
But
next time. It's not that difficult, actually.
Okay.
Let me try.
You're going to do it now?
Not sure if it works.
No, maybe the people listening to us anyway, will hear.
We're not gonna.
I don't.
So I have the hot take. It's something that's like a snippet of a podcast. It's of a very controversial person. So Ooh. We should not focus on the person. It's from Kid Rock.
Okay.
It's not to focus on the person. I heard a snippet of this past weekend with Theo Von. He was apparently on there. And he said something that I did find interesting because we've talked about this in the past. About Gen AI and the impact on music and stuff like that.
Is this the podcast?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
this one.
Yeah,
the past weekend.
I assume so.
Okay,
unless he was there multiple times. and he said, "I don't give a F star CK." No, not sure what that means.
Whatever.
I don't give a F star CK about Gen AI, and he was talking about Gen AI generated music using his voice.
So basically, saying use my voice.
I don't give a F star CK.
Whatever that means.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I find interesting, right? Because we are talking about this a lot, and one of the things that comes up is like, who has the copyright, which is already very difficult when it comes to image generation and a certain style, which is, but there you can still apply a copyright law. When it comes to deepfakes, copyright law doesn't even apply. Like, you need to be very creative in order to bring this to court under copyright law. And this is more or less a deep fake of his voice.
Yeah. Right?
And we see this a lot. And the performance of these things is also becoming very good.
Yeah.
I think probably his stance is not the average stance in the music world. I think people are concerned about this. If your voice or whatever of you gets used without any agreements or without any royalties and he explained a little bit about it, why he thinks so, and he says a bit jokingly, like, it would be cool if someone does the work for me, creates a good song, because no one makes shit from royalties. The only thing that people, we as musicians, make music from is from performances, concerts, live performances.
Yeah. So and basically, like, this if you get more popular because people create Gen AI music for you, people are going to come to your shows and you're going to make more money.
Exactly. That was his reasoning. Yeah. Yeah. And he was saying, like, I mean, no one else is going to give a live performance for me. I mean, are you going to buy a ticket for me or for the Chris Rock, Kid Rock cover band? He's right there, right?
There was, I think, it's a bit of a side note, but in Japan, I think they did a, there was a virtual virtual artist or something that they had like holograms of.
Holograms of ABBA is very, London, really? You can, yeah. Hey, the four people of the ABBA.
Yeah.
People go every day to their shows.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, to the four holograms. But
that probably goes to the state of.
That goes to the fund behind it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I thought it was an interesting take, and it's probably like an edge take, and
everybody
thinks it. But it's an interesting way to look at it, and especially I think in the music world, because in the music world, like for the individual artist, probably most of the money comes from performance.
But then,
when it comes to more, let's say, like images, paintings, these type of digital art,
yeah,
it very much comes from the work, right?
Yeah, it's a different type of. Yeah. But then I think, if someone figures out how to make money with his Gen AI songs, then he would care.
Well, at that point, well, probably he has too much money to really care. But
if he would just be a lot artist, of money.
What if the generated song is actually very popular and then he's forced to sing it on his performances?
Well, his stance was, oh, that would be easy because then I don't need to write a song.
Okay.
But what if it's the opposite? What if it's a song that has very...
Negative
impact. Negative, like reflects very negative to his image.
I think that's hard for Kid Rock, but
okay, yeah.
But for other artists, that could be the case. Yeah,
interesting. Never thought of from that point.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see how this will evolve, because YouTube is also working on this, generating voices, songs via Gen AI, but very much in close collaboration with artists.
Yeah,
with explicit consent. Sam Altman was also on the podcast with Lex Friedman, also talking about like that there, if your content, like your images, are used to generate something in that style, you should in some way profit from that. That they're thinking about how can we link this to something that, to the original content, so that in some way you can remunerate. I think we're still far from that because it's very hard to link these things. But it's interesting to see how this field will evolve. Don't think it evolved so quickly that today it's a bit a free-for-all when it comes to royalties and copyright law and these things. It's a bit free-for-all. Don't think it will stay that way.
I agree. And talking about generating music from other people's likeness, maybe we can already hit the outro sound.
Yes. You have taste.
I gotta go.
In a way that's meaningful to suffer.
Sophie, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks, Mark.
I'm Bill Gates.
Thanks everyone for listening.
I also just want to say,
I would
on time today.
TypeScript.
Yeah, it writes
parts
of a lot of code for me, and usually it's slightly wrong.
I'm reminded incidentally of Rust here.
Rust.
Congressman, iPhone is made by a different company, and so
you will not learn Rust while skydiving.
Well, I'm sorry, guys. I don't know what's going on.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today about large neural networks. It's really an honor to be here.
Rust.
Data Topics.
Welcome to the Data.
Welcome to the Data Topics podcast.
Ciao.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you next time.